there. Current estimates placed their arrival 3 months in the future, but there was an inevitable margin of error. No matter. The first wave of shuttle flights had already made several return trips to and from the surface, and many transponder-equipped cargo packages had already been dropped, ready to be found in a few months' time. A shuttle was descending now, its deltoid shape dark against a tongue of equatorial landmass, which the geography section was calling the peninsula. Doubtless, I thought, they would come up with something less literal given a few more weeks. 5 more flights would be all it took to get all the remaining colonists down to the surface. Another 5 would suffice to transport all the crew and the heavy equipment, which could not be dropped via cargo packages. The Santiago would remain in orbit, a skeletal hulk denuded of anything remotely useful. The shuttle's thrusters fired briefly, kicking it onto an atmospheric insertion course. I watched it dwindle until it was out of sight. A few minutes later, near the horizon, I thought I saw the glint of re-entry fire as it touched air. It would not be long before it was on the ground. A preliminary landing camp had already been established, near the southern tip of the peninsula. Nueva Santiago, we were thinking of calling it, but again it was early days. And now Swan's pupil was opening. It was too far away to see, of course, but the angstrom-thin plastic structure was being unfurled at the Lagrange point. The placement was almost perfect. A torch beam seemed to fall on the somber world below, casting an ellipsoidal region of brightness. The beam moved, hunting, reshaping. When they had adjusted it properly, it would double the solar illumination falling on the peninsula region. There was life down there, I knew. I wondered how it would adjust to the change in ambient light, and found it hard to stir up much enthusiasm. My communications bracelet chimed. I glanced down, wondering who amongst my crew would have the nerve to interrupt this moment of triumph. But the bracelet merely informed me that there was a recorded message waiting for me in my quarters. Annoyed, but nonetheless curious, I pushed myself out of the observation blister, through a gasket of locks and transfer wheels, until I reached the main spinning part of our great ship. Now that I was in a gravitational zone, I walked freely, calmly, not allowing the faintest hint of doubt to show on my face. Now and then the crew and senior officers passed me, saluting, sometimes even offering to shake my hand. The general mood was one of utter jubilation. We had crossed interstellar space and arrived safely at a new world, and I had brought us here before our rivals. I stopped and talked with some of them. It was vital to cement alliances, for troubled times lay ahead, but all the while my mind was on the recorded message, wondering what it could mean. I soon found out.
"I assume by now you've killed me," Constanza said, "or at the very least made me disappear for good. No, don't say a word. This isn't an interactive recording, and I won't take very much of your precious time."
I was looking at her face on the screen in my quarters, a face that looked fractionally younger than the last time I had seen her. She continued,
"I recorded this some time ago, as you've probably gathered. I downloaded it into the Santiago's data network, and had to intervene once every 6 months to prevent it being delivered to you. I knew that I was an increasingly sharp thorn in your side, and thought the chances were good that you would find a way of getting rid of me before too long."
I smiled despite myself, remembering how she had demanded to know how long I had held her prisoner. "Well done, Constanza.
I've ensured that a copy will reach a number of senior officers and crew, Skye.